This Dharma talk was given to the Clearway Zen Sangha by Lotus Vu. This talk is made available free of charge. More information about Clearway Zen can be found at www.clearwayzen.ca.
So, when you meet other Zen practitioners here in the Sangha, they refer to Zen as a practice. We have a practice. The Buddha's teachings isn't about a philosophy to ponder about. It is a set of principles to follow. It is a set of practice to observe and apply. It's not a moral or sometimes reasonable things. Matter of fact, a lot of Zen practice is outright defies logic. For example, how can you just accept something and be able to change it? Just defies logic, right? So you can't change it until you accept it completely. How can you relax and be completely alert instead of sleeping? That defies logic, right? The jhanas, when the deeper you go, the more alert you are, right? Which is completely against logic. Most of us, they go, the more relaxed you are, the more easy you fall asleep. And then the practice we talk about. What is this practice? This practice is basically doing nothing. Practicing mindfulness and Zen is basically doing nothing, which is observing things as they arise and fall, not interfering with it. When people think of a practice, you think of, doing something, getting very good at that very one task of doing something. The Zen practice is getting very good at the task of doing nothing. And we're not talking about doing nothing on the external. Huh? There's a lot of things that gets done, but we're talking about doing nothing in the internal. Nothing in the internal. Not adding intention, the force of will and desire and resistance in the eternal to everything that happens. So the practice isn't about doing something, it's about doing nothing. Marie and I were saying, we Buddhists are terrible at promoting ourselves. How about we get a booth, at the health and wellness show or something like that? Marie says, what would we say in that booth? Come and do nothing? We got nothing to show you. And the ultimate, realization of Zen is nothing. Okay, that will attract a lot of people. What do you think? How do we promote this? So a lot of Zen teachers, they don't do anything. They just live. They just live. People just see through their live experience, how they carry themselves, who they are, the essence, the energy that is coming from them. They're like, okay, this person got something. I don't know what, but I gotta find out. And I know it's a very weird way to promote. But that's how I was attracted to my teacher. I mean, it was through his person. I mean, he wasn't very good at promoting either. It was through interacting with him that I've noticed there's something in him that is different from the other monks that I came across. So there's a lightness of being. There's a sense of bubbly joy. There's a sense of everything's okay. No matter what happens. One thing he's completely absent from him. He doesn't complain about anything. You know, Canadians love to complain about the weather. You know, it starts good conversations. That's how we start conversations, right? In Vietnam, we don't complain about the weather. What weather? It's always sunny and nice. People find something to complain about. My teacher, he never really complains about anything. Things just happen. He's like, oh, whatever. Okay. And so the practice, all of Zen practice, is about the lived experience. The lived experience of the practitioner, the lived experience that after a while, Zen becomes you. It takes over your life. Takes over your being. No, it's not the Borg on the continuum. But it's sort of like that, right? You will be assimilated by the practice. Good assimilation, though. Many people come across Thich Nhat Hanh, and the most striking thing about him is how he moves. How gentle he moves, how he talks. And each Zen master exudes a different energy. For Thich Nhat Hanh is this serenity energy. It's this energy like a caring mother. Anybody can just sense it. They sit in his presence and listen to one of his talks. For a guy who's really rebellious and sort of like Greenpeace, you know, he's very much like Greenpeace activist, right? Comes across really unassuming, really, you know, non-violence, really non-aggressive. But he'll stake his life on the things he's doing. So, some Zen masters, like my teacher, doesn't come across as calm at all. He's very bubbly. He's completely bubbly. He loves to joke. He's a riot. He loves to challenge people. I mean, his job after all of those retreats that he did, comes out, and after a while, his job is, I call it being the enlightened tour guide. Because he would organize all these bus tours to go to the rural areas where, you know, there's a lot of population of sick people or poor people, and they organize a whole bus full of well-to-do people from the city to go there and bring provisions and money and things like that to give to the less fortunate. And I'll do that once a month. And I went on one of those bus tours with him. And a lot of people who went on those bus tours regularly with him, they own companies, you know, they want to give back to the community. So, you know, once a month they'll to go on that bus tour. And it's fun too. They make friends out of that community. And I participated in the tour, and I saw him, and I said, "You became an enlightened tour guide." And he laughed, and he says, "Yes, this is what people need here." I asked him. I said, "You don't teach Zen at all?" He goes, "No, that's not what people are looking for." So I just give them what they need. And you see, so his practice is going with the flow. It's going with what people need, what it presents in the immediate. It doesn't have to be a particular way it unfolds. You know, we always have this impression that, oh, we practice Zen after, you know, after a while, maybe sometime in the future we'd be this stoic Zen master. I'm definitely not stoic. Old Zen master. I remember one of the time, 10, 15 years ago, somebody came into my class, and her daughter had came earlier in one of the earlier courses. She looked at me, she goes, "You look so young." They were expecting, you know, some old guy. Millen fits the part very well. Not me. I didn't have a speck of white hair back then. Right? So that's not what people were expecting. When you look at the practice is, it's got no shape and form. Is what is unfold. My teacher's practice is taking people on a bus tour every month. You think a guy who gone to so many solitary retreats for so long, very accomplished in the jhanas and all the meditations, would go out and teach that? No. He seeks nothing. Whatever unfolds, he goes with it. I call that embracing Zen. Well, we have this very particular idea about, you know, what an accomplished Zen master is like. You don't have an idea. I mean, that defies all the ideas of what accomplished Zen master is like when he's holding a flag, you know, tour guide flag. Hey, this way. And that's why we prejudge things. We have all these ideas about what Zen is. And when we really come to practice Zen, we realize that all the ideas we have about Zen is wrong. And that in order to truly embrace Zen, we have to let go of all the ideas in our head about Zen, about the Buddha, about anything. And after a while, the practice, well, you can't really define it anymore. It's just life, everything that happens. You're watching it as they arise and fall, arise and fall. You know, at first when I started my Zen practice, you know, going to Titnyakan's retreats and a lot of the Zen talks and Zen retreats of Master Chittentang as well, my aunt's teacher. You have this idea that anxiety arises in you, you know, it's like, go away. No, affliction rises in you, go away. That stuff to you. You're supposed to defeat it, right? Well, the real Zen practice is, hello, bye. Hello, bye. You don't even care if it arises anymore. And when that does happen, it actually disappears as fast as it arises. And it doesn't even come anymore. It's sort of that visitor that you don't welcome very much. So it comes into your house, it sits and wants some drama, wants some fun, and then you don't engage with it, and it's like, this is a pretty boring place. I'm leaving. So when you stop controlling life, when we just accept life as it is, which is what mindfulness is, right? The definition of mindfulness is to pay attention in a particular way. And that particular way is to not judge, to not prefer one way or another, to not embrace or push away. Easier said than done, right? Takes a lot of practice. So next weekend, we start a whole week of retreat to dive deep into the Zen practice, embrace it 24/7. To sort of like give ourselves a somewhat semi-ideal environment to support each other in discovering the depths and the subtleties of our mind so that we can see how we can pay attention this way 24/7. And when you go to a Zen retreat, you go to any sort of retreat and you have an expectation, pretty much setting yourself up for misery. Because you can see that expectation spins out during the retreat and it built and built and built and built until you're so tired. You're like, what am I doing? I give up, too much work. Hopefully that happens before you leave the retreat. That's why, you know, a lot of the Zen practice is about a time retreat where you go in and you have to be there. You're forced to be there. You don't have the option to leave until a particular time. Why? Because when that happens, you have to live with that frustration and figure it out. Okay? And figure how they became that way. And it's usually because of some form of expectation or some way of you trying to control the outcome. And that's the perfect, perfect way how to make your Zen retreat miserable. Trust me, I've been to many of them like that. The truth is, none of us are immune. Don't expect to be perfect either, because that's an expectation too. The practice is basically making mistakes and learning from them. So there's a lot of things in Zen that defies logic, the practice itself, the teaching itself. I mean, look at that Heart Sutra I just read out. Everything in there gives you a splitting headache. There's no logic in it whatsoever. You see, we're taught in the world that we do something, we're building up something, we attain something, we gain something. And the practice of Zen is completely opposite. There's nothing to be attained. Matter of fact, is a dismantling of everything that we think we are. It's the complete opposite of everything in life that we've known. When we grow up, we become somebody. We define ourselves, we got a career, we, you know, define who we are, we become somebody. That's what society tells us to do, right? And then, well, if you can't be somebody, then you be somebody who nobody wants to be. Right? Be a little bit of a rebel. Be outside of society's norms. But that's somebody too, right? So we're constantly defining ourselves. And for Zen, it's the opposite. We're dismantling all that definition. And we're saying there is a space. There's a space There's a presence beyond words, beyond definition. And it's not nihilistic. It's not nothing, but it's not something either. So it's very confusing. I saw a question on Reddit. Could somebody please define Zen for me? Because I'm tired of all these Zen master cryptics explanation. I thought to myself, good luck. I'm selling that on a trade show. Selling something you can't even define. I don't know how the Buddha did it, though. He did it. He did a damn good job of it, too. So what was it about Zen that attracts you to it? For me, it was food. I was a kid. Kid loves food. Come on. My teacher's presence and the food he brought. That was my introduction to Zen. It was the food. You guys, Vietnamese food in the temple is so you know why? Because they bring the best stuff at home to offer to the temple. Some things they don't even eat themselves. They're not even willing to buy and eat themselves. They'll bring it to the temple and offer it to the Buddha. It's in that culture, right? So, man, food from the altar is the best stuff there is. So that's what attracted me to Zen, because my teacher had those things. And of course, being around his presence, he's never grumpy. He's always bubbly, happy, cheerful, authentic to himself. What attracts you to Zen?
This podcast is created by members of the Clearway Zen Sangha. If you enjoyed the talk and wish to show support, donation information can be found on our website, www.clearwayzen.ca. Thank you for listening.